Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program, very remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, September 28, 2021. South Sudan's Auditor General says $2 million from IMF loan for paying salaries went missing.
Whereas some of the money was advanced and paid out to government employees, there were other monies which were spent in a way in which the Auditor General was not satisfied with the explanation.
And the police commissioner of Maridi County in Western Equatoria State was killed by an unknown gunman.
We are doing investigation, but no information yet. We have taken suspects to prison for investigation.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's Auditor General says at least $2 million from the International Monetary Fund loan for paying salaries of South Sudanese civil servants has been misused. The South Sudan's Deputy Minister of Finance says the government provided IMF with a detailed report showing how the funding was used for its intended purpose. For VOA News, on N, Walter Solomon reports from Juba.
South Sudan's Ministry of Finance and Planning, the Bank of South Sudan, and the government of South Sudan reached agreements with the IMF to spend the money according to the 2011 Public Financial Management and Accountability Act, the Civil Service Act, and a 2020 IMF Letter of Intent. Auditor General Wundo tells South Sudan in Focus today that the compliance audit his office conducted shows that most of the loan was used according to South Sudan laws and IMF requirements, but some of the money was diverted to accounts of individuals.
Whereas some of the money was advanced and paid out to government employees, there were other monies which were spent in a way in which the Auditor General was not satisfied with the explanation. So you cannot put a figure on it, but we are saying that we know for sure that about 2 million, in the region of $2 million, were used. Explanations were not satisfactory.
A September 9, 2021 National Audit Chamber statement signed by Auditor General Stephen Wundo indicates the government also failed to provide supporting documentation for payments totaling more than $468,000. Wundo also said, quote, rapid credit facility funds amounting to $3.8 million were utilized to finance state conditional loans, contrary to the agreement. Wundo also states that a payment was made to non-salary creditors amounting to $532,664, along with more than $3.5 million, which the government failed to provide sufficient information regarding their identities and postings of recipients. Deputy Finance and Planning Minister Agok Makurkur says the IMF loan was used transparently.
The first installment money we get is $52 million. Yes, and then after we given a full report about these 52, how we use it, then the IMF is convened and then given again 174. After also we use the second payment of 174, then IMF come with 350 something. So all this money is used through a transparency and full report given to IMF. Concerning the arrears, yes, we pay for arrears. Any money come from the IMF according to IMF directives. We given for a certain payment concerning the arrears. If there is any money given to individual, I don't know about this money.
Wundo says if the Ministry of Finance or any other ministries fail out of compliance with the agreement, they should admit doing so and strive to improve in the future.
I would be surprised if the ministry indulged itself into disputing the language of the Auditor General. The fact that we are not satisfied with some of the transactions does not mean that the IMF would break relationship with the government of South Sudan. What we are trying to say is that we should do better in future. That is the whole idea of audit.
Hundu is urging the government to improve its mechanism for paying employees, saying he believes money is being wasted on claimants who do not deserve it, including ghost workers.
In the modern world, the solution is, one, issue biometric certifications to all government employees, if not to all citizens. It is a security matter. Two, pay government employees through the commercial bank systems, where they would have to show their identification. Digitize the payrolls. The days of manual bookkeeping are behind us, and there are a lot of loopholes that can be exploited.
Hundu says the government can also seek assistance from the international community when necessary. For VOA News, I am Onan Walter Solomon in Juba.
Some journalists in South Sudan say they are still struggling to get information from public institutions. The reporters say officials often view journalists as threats or spies for international organizations. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino has more from Juba.
Okech Francis, an editor with a local news outlet called Juba Echo and a freelance journalist for Bloomberg News Agency, says access to information in South Sudan has remained a challenge for most journalists working in the country.
Media terrain in South Sudan isn't an easy one. People really feel journalists may be spies for any other organizations which they deem is not friendly to them. It goes on, majorly it's with the government officials who we mostly turn to for most of the information that we want to publish. Some government officials accuse us of fostering change agenda simply because we are asking questions which doesn't sound well to their ears. Maybe you are asking about corruption, maybe you are asking about failure in service delivery and the rest.
Francis says information provided by public institutions is often propaganda and not credible. He says in the past, when there was a crisis, officials from various parties would speak up on whatever was happening in the country. But since the unity government was formed, officials rarely speak. Francis says it is every citizen's right to access information and that it is a high time the government and public institutions become media-friendly in order for the nation to prosper.
People have to get acquainted with journalists, the work of journalists. People have to know that journalism itself is part of the development of society. We journalists work to communicate. We bridge a gap between the people who want to know and the people who have the knowledge of what other people want to know.
Oyet Patrick, chairperson of the Union of Journalists in South Sudan and a reporter with CGTN, says accessing information remains an uphill task for journalists and offers an example of a recent attempt to obtain information from the Minister of Foreign Affairs.
When Kenya waived visa for South Sudanese people, Kenya made the announcement, and then you want to get the information now as reaction from the public office in South Sudan, which is the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. It is extremely difficult. Right now, Uganda has done the same. The Uganda has waived visa for South Sudanese people. You want reaction from the public office in South Sudan is very difficult. That tells you that, and this is a very simple thing. So you can imagine now, if you are doing a story that is related to, for example, corruption, whereby you want to investigate, you can imagine how difficult it would be for you to get that information from the public office.
Patrick says officials should understand that what journalists are doing is in the interest of the public. He says he is impressed with the creation of the Commission for Access to Information, which he believes shows the government is at least trying to change. Patrick says compared to previous years, he has seen an improvement in government officials providing information, although not all officials cooperate with journalists.
There is a little bit of improvement that we still need more to be done. For example, the officials who up to now, when you request them for information, they stand saying, first tell me the kind of questions you want to ask, why do you need this information, And then later they say, they sometimes they give you time that does not help you. You need the information within 3 days, and then they give you the, they say we'll give you the information next week. And then the next thing you hear is that they have traveled outside, you know.
Patrick says he understands the transitional government includes a number of parties, but he says government officials need to know the laws of the country which protect freedom of expression and access to information. Poverty Alfred, a member of the National Press Club South Sudan, an organization that advocates for the improved working environment of journalists, says access to information has been challenging for both journalists and citizens because officials often need to get permission in advance before speaking to the media.
Much advocacy is required to be done at the moment so that citizens are able to know their right to access information, and then also this advocacy should also be focused on the stakeholders or those working in various offices, whether being in government and other non-governmental organizations and private institutions. Because if this advocacy to the right of information is done within the country, then citizens will be able to access information freely. And of course, also they need to know the limitations. What are the limitations? And citizens need to know all these contents. The more they know, the easier it will be to access information.
South Sudan in Focus contacted Moyiga Nduru, the head of Commission for Access to Information, for comment on the story, but his phone number was switched off. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Officials in Maridi County say gunmen killed the area's police commissioner and his cousin last evening. The acting commissioner for Maridi County says security forces arrested a number of suspects. For VOA News, Seba Martin Murangi reports from Juba.
Acting Commissioner for Maridi County, John Ezekiel, says security forces arrested at least 11 suspects in connection with the killing of Police Commissioner Brigadier General Chol Deng. He says all of the suspects are cooperating with investigators.
We are doing investigation, but no information yet. We have taken suspects to prison for investigation. I urge people of Maridi not to take law into their own hands.
Ezekiel says the security situation is normal and he is encouraging residents to go about their normal duties, saying security forces are in control of the situation. Maridi resident Habiba Musa says she fears relatives of the late commissioner may want to revenge his death. Musa says she did not report to work today because she is afraid of what might happen next. Maridi now is in fear following the killing of this big police official and his relative. We don't even know who shot them. As I am talking, I never went to work. My workplace is quiet. People are in fear. And people are just seated in groups, just ready. In case of anything, we run. Maridi County Paramount Chief Daniel James Burkindo is assuring residents that security forces are in control of the situation and that all the perpetrators will be brought to justice.
I urge the community to be at ease. Government is there. Be at your own places, much as the disease is from a Denga community. All the Dingas in Maridi are all the community members of Maridi. As a paramount chief, I don't want to see people in fear. And this should not cause any problem between the people.
Civil society activist Gismala Rayson expressed concern about another recent incident in which vehicles traveling on Maridi Monogu Road were ambushed and burnt last week. Rayson says insecurity is causing fear among many Maridi residents.
I'm really very saddened of what is going on nowadays in our surrounding. In the Western Equatoria, it's not good to see people dying dying of the crisis that is caused by many crises. So we are not happy completely about it, and we really condemn it in strong terms possible.
Rayson is calling on authorities to prompt apprehend the criminals who killed Police Commissioner Brigadier General Chol Deng. For VOA News, I am Seba Martin Murangi in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, how has South Africa managed its third wave of COVID-19? That story is lined up after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. And in our Tuesday Health segment, we take a look at how South Africa managed its third wave of COVID-19. South Africa has exited its third coronavirus wave. That's according to the country's National Institute for Communicable Diseases. It says just over 87,000 COVID-related deaths have been tallied since it started keeping records in March last year. Reporter Vicky Starch spoke to the institute's head of public health surveillance and response.
Groom says at the peak of its third wave, they were recording 20,000 positive cases a day. She says for a second day in a row today, the cases are below 1,000, with the number of active cases now over 50,000.
So definitely the case numbers have come down, as well as the number of positive tests out of the total number of tests that are done. And so at the peak of the wave, that was over 30%, and it's come down quite quickly in the last 2 weeks, and is now under 5% positivity.
Groom thinks that in the future, identifying the whole country as being in a wave will be used less, and people will talk more about resurgences in particular regions. She says that vaccines won't entirely eliminate the coronavirus, but will reduce severe cases and deaths. That means there will have to be a new way of coping with COVID-19.
And so I think we really need to start integrating COVID more into our routine health services and even to integrate vaccination. And I think what some of the provinces, for example, have been, you know, when patients come for their chronic medications, also offering vaccination. And so this is definitely a disease we're going to be living with for the foreseeable future. And so I think we really need to, you know, try and shift our thinking from being either in a wave or before a wave or after a wave or preparing for the next wave, and really try and see how long-term we're going to be living with the virus.
Having said that, with the summer school and workers' Christmas holidays just months away, there is concern about a fourth wave.
I think, look, it's a definite risk with us only having vaccinated a fifth of our adult population at the moment. I think the election, the run-up to the local government elections in November is also a bit of a concern, just in terms of political rallies or get-togethers that may occur. So we do need to keep a watch on that. So I think for the foreseeable future as well, until our vaccination rates are much higher, you know, I think we definitely need to still adhere to the mask-wearing, hand hygiene and social distancing, and to be aware of these social gatherings as being potential super spreader events.
Groom explained why the South African government is so unhappy about the United Kingdom's refusal to take it off its travellers' red list.
I think from the reports that I've seen, that they've mentioned that Beta was still very prevalent in South Africa, which is not the case, as the Beta variant has decreased, and Delta variant is, you know, accounts for, I think it does more than 96% of the cases in South Africa. And so to use the Beta variant as the reason is scientifically flawed. And I think it's hard to understand why individuals from South Africa who are vaccinated with the same vaccines that are in use in the UK would not fulfill their criteria for not having to quarantine.
The South African newspaper, the Sunday Times, reported that a delegation from the Department of Health and several scientists would be meeting virtually with the UK government on this issue. Vicky Stark for VOA News in Cape Town.
Still on COVID, three teenagers have been revealed as the brains behind one of Australia's most authoritative COVID tracking sites. From Sydney, Phil Masser reports.
In the pandemic, numbers are everything. New South Wales Premier Gladys Berejiklian is one of millions of Australians tracking the vaccination rates, hoping to get the numbers high enough that lockdowns can end. She gave an update in Sydney on Monday.
Pleasingly, we've officially passed the 85% first dose vaccination in New South Wales, which is just outstanding. And we're looking forward, obviously, to seeing that number continue. So can I please encourage everybody in New South Wales to come forward and get vaccinated?
Tracking a mountain of statistics is complex and time-consuming. One of the most comprehensive COVID-19 monitoring sites in Australia is run by three teenagers in Melbourne. The website COVID Base AU has been collating coronavirus statistics since April 2021, breaking down Australian and global data on infections, hospitalizations, deaths, and vaccinations. It was a project that started as a hobby for teenagers interested in coding and the media. Their website has become a trusted source of information. The site is run by 15-year-old Jack and his two friends.
It's important in providing a sort of centralized and easy way to access a lot of the data. And I think in making sure that we track the data every single day, we're sort of able to give a lot of context behind all the data, which some government sites might not be able to do.
For months, the boys wanted to be anonymous, but they were revealed as the brains behind COVID Base AU when they posted a picture on Twitter after they'd been vaccinated. Jack and his friends say that despite the demands of their tracking website, they're keeping up with their schoolwork.
At the beginning, firstly, we sort of just thought that people might not find us as reliable if we were sort of kids. But we have seen that Australia's Health Minister, Greg Hunt, he congratulated us, and I saw Victoria's chief health officer, he retweeted our thing, so it has been pretty special to see that happen.
Millions of Australians in Canberra, Melbourne and Sydney remain in lockdown as Delta variant infections continue to rise. About 97,500 coronavirus cases have been recorded in Australia since the pandemic began. 1,231 people have died. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
From Sydney, we return to South Sudan, where some residents in Jonglei State capital Bor say they are worried about getting clean drinking water after the only station supplying the town with purified water was closed due to flooding. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Bor Water Station Manager John Jurkuch says the decision was made to shut down the station because water pumping machines were submerged in flood waters last Saturday. He says water levels are still thigh high in some parts of the station after a dike broke.
The flood comes and all the pump, all type of the pump we have are under the water. And this pump cannot be operated when they are inside the water. So we can't do anything.
Jurkuch has apologized to the more than 40,000 Bor residents who counted on the station's purified water. Jurkuch says the station will resume pumping water when the state government repairs the broken dike and floodwaters recede.
We don't have our own plan alone as the management of Bor Water Station. We are very much depend on the government plan. One is for the government to close the broken dike. And when they do that, the water will be able to subsidize and subside it. And then from there, we can see how many damages it has caused to our installation. Definitely, it will cause some damages on the pumps. And from there, will become our own challenge to repair the broken farm and resume.
Block 6, Bowtown resident Jacob Ajang says families are now forced to drink unpurified water from the River Nile. Ajang says most people cannot afford to buy bottled water.
Only source and the reliable source that we were relying on to get water has been closed down officially by the flood. There is no way of getting clean water. Actually, the land is flooded, and when the flooding has come, it's only the River Nile, which bursts outside. It has brought water out, actually, but the water is not good for human consumption. So all of us are crying. We need government to do something. We need, actually, the government of the day, let me say, to do something, because there will be no any other alternative for we to survive.
Ajang is calling on Jonglei authorities to fix their town's broken dike quickly so that floodwaters recede. John Manguk, the deputy head teacher of Black Eagle Academy in Bor, says more than 300 students and teachers at the school walk to other areas to fill up their containers with clean water from boreholes after the Bor water station is stopped operating.
We are getting water nearby boreholes. Our neighbors, who is having borehole, so we are getting water from there. These are people themselves. They go and collect them. They go and collect water from there, and then they come with it in the school. Yes, we are worried because the water from borehole is not treated. So then we don't have another alternative to get water. So we just go and collect them, and we bring them to school, though they are not treated.
Bol Dengbol is with the Bor-based advocacy group Interfit South Sudan. Bol says leadership has been a problem in the area for a long time and continues to be even after the formation of the state government.
We've recently had issues, you know, when they were not appointed. Again, when they are appointed, we also having the same issues. They are not in the state, they are not in their workstation, they are not doing their work proactively as we expected. These are issues, but still we have the government in place. We can say there is a government in Jonglei State. And I would like to urge the government to come in and put in more energy.
Public health officials say drinking water straight from the river is dangerous because it can transmit waterborne diseases such as typhoid. They urge residents to use water treatment tablets when fetching water for domestic use from the Nile or boreholes. For VOA News, I am Deng Guiding, reporting from Bor.
Let us know what you think about issues in our news. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. Send us your brief comments and we will air them every Friday. That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday. We now leave you with Eddie Kenzo and the song Blessed.
Mulembe. Sancho, get them up, my tongue and insuvanco. Go for your matai, coco dentin. Man, you come, come up, get dentaba. Busy we and say no to it to some I feel blessed, I feel blessed. Oh yeah, I feel nice today.
We have been listening to Eddie Kenzo and the song Blessed. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers. because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Friends on Sukumaranga Bude, Chitegeza Gwanga Muje, Muje Tutule, Muje Tutese. If you gone to be married, I feel blessed, I feel blessed. Oh, yeah.